I believe Mr. McCurdy has a copy of the RCW issue to pass me on.
Hi, I'm Chris Gibson on behalf of Mr. Sikeo, is how I pronounce it. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I'd also like to thank Mr. McCurdy for accommodating my schedule and for this court's willingness to put the case at the end of the calendar.
You have the pleasure of waiting.
I am particularly indebted to Mr. McCurdy for that. We're asking this court to reverse Mr. Sikeo's conviction for felony harassment of a criminal justice participant. And to do that, to reach that relief, we're also asking this court then to overrule, ignore, disregard.
Well, we don't overrule.
Right.
That is one of the things I wanted to bring out. The state's brief, which I realize Mr. McCurdy did not write, but it cites the case of State versus Stalker. That is not good law. It implies that this court overrules its prior decisions, but we do not do that. And this court, in fact, I am the author of the opinion. We wrote an opinion last year called Grisby versus Herzog, which explains the whole system in excruciating detail, and we do not use the incorrect and harmful test.
Okay.
So we would not like to see parties continue to expect us to do that in the briefs.
Okay.
And we would not like to see them continue to cite State versus Stalker.
All right, Your Honor.
That's just an aside.
Then I would ask that this court not follow Boyle.
That's the way to do it.
And Boyle, the reason the Boyle decision is wrong is because it reinterpreted what the legislature had written and decided to place an or where there was an and. And this comes down to the issue of, did CCO Johnson reasonably fear that Mr. Sikeo had the present and future ability to carry out his threat to shoot her? It's as simple as that. Do you need to have both the fear of the present ability and future ability to carry out this threat? That's what this boils down.
That kind of the underlying premise of your argument is kind of the standard. Well, if you have a double negative in a sentence, mm-hmm. often the double negatives cancel each other out, and so you would restate the sentence without either negative. So in this case, it would become threatening words do constitute harassment if it is apparent the person has the present and future ability to carry out, and therefore that's an element in the conjunctive of the crime.
Okay.
But is that truly a valid rule of statutory construction when you have a double negative that might not be intended as a...
as an element?
An inverse statement of the positive. Maybe it's just a double negative because that's to emphasize the negativity.
And I guess I'm not quite sure where it goes. In the end, the legislature's language in the statute plainly says that you have to have present and future ability, whether it's phrased in the singular positive or the double negative.
Well, I mean, you're asking us to rewrite the statute.
No, we're not asking. I'm asking this court to reverse what the Boyle court, not reverse.
But, well, you are, because you just said plainly the statute says that you have to have the present and future ability to carry out the threat.
Well, and it's maybe not
exactly what it says.
It says you have to have the present and future ability to carry out the threat.
That phrase is in there.
Yes.
But the way that you preceded it, the words preceding it, were not in the way the statute was written. That's right. I don't mean to interrupt.
Okay. The way the statute is written says what it means. And maybe it's more verbiage that needed to be put in that line, but it simply says present and future ability to carry out the threat. And if you, I mean, the simplest way to look at this, I think, is the way the Boyle court interpreted it reads that entire sentence completely out of the statute. Why? Because the general definition of harassment in its gross misdemeanor form or felony form is that a present or future ability to commit the harm. If you read this the way the Boyle court did, you don't need that sentence whatsoever.
Okay. So, all right. So the jury's asked the question. They have to decide, is this harassment? Okay. That's the question for them. They're going to say yes or no to that. Okay, and then now you're the defense attorney, okay, so you can get them to answer that question no, but in order to do that, you have to show, well, it was apparent to Ms. Johnson here that the Mr. Sikeo did not have the present ability to carry out the threat, and he didn't have the future ability to carry out the threat. That's what you have to prove.
No, you have to prove that he either didn't have the present ability or he didn't have the future ability. Because in order for it to be harassment against a criminal justice defendant, and a felony harassment, not just general harassment, for it to be felony harassment against a criminal justice participant, which we hold to be kind of a unique demographic, it's us. We're used to being exposed to this.
This is what I was trying to get at with my earlier question, which I think it's definitely confusing and hard to talk about. But this is not saying what is harassment.
It is saying what is.
This is saying what is not harassment.
Maybe in an inartful way, it is saying that harassment, felony harassment in the context of a criminal justice participant, has two special things. First of all, it has to be fear that would be reasonable for a criminal justice participant. Given what our job is, quite often dealing with criminals on a regular basis, I think that's a heightened standard of fear that the legislature intended to impose. Secondly, there has to be fear that it was both present and future ability to carry it out. That's why we're setting up this special form of felony harassment for all of us who practice in the criminal justice system. And the legislature in doing that, I think the Kagi Amendment, which introduced this very language, makes it crystal clear what the legislature intended to do. We want to have a heightened level of fear, and we want to have the scope of that fear needs to be broader. It doesn't need to be either or, the present or the future. It needs to be both. And the same thing with the fear. It has to be slightly heightened. The bottom line is the Boyle Court reads the entire sentence out of the statute. You don't need that there if it means what Boyle Court says it means, because we already have either or, present or future, in the general definition for harassment. That language, if it means anything, means what Mr. Sukeyo says it does. And it meant what Mr. Boyle said it did. Now, the Boyle Court said, oh, that'd be absurd. Then we can't prosecute him for any sorts of future electronic harassment. Well, that's the same mistake the Aspetarte Court made, because it's still harassment if there's present or future ability. Even if it's a lower standard of fear, it's still harassment. It's just not felony harassment. And that's the point. In Aspetarte, they said, well, it couldn't possibly be, because then you wouldn't be convicted of, you know, a higher level assault. It doesn't result in a felony violation of the court order. Well, you still get a felony out of it. You get the assault felony. Here, you still get a gross misdemeanor. You still prosecute the harassment. It doesn't mean this is all crime-free. We're asking this court not to follow Boyle and to reverse Mr. Sukeyo's conviction. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Dennis McCurdy for the State of Washington. I'm filling in for Ian Ith today for the purposes of oral argument. Threatening words do not constitute harassment if it is apparent to the criminal justice participant that the person does not have the present and future ability to carry out the threat. I'm asking this court to simply hold that means exactly what it says. If, and I'm going to use an acronym, if the CJP knows the defendant doesn't have the ability to carry out the threat at all, then it's not harassment. It makes perfect sense. But that sentence does not add any additional burden or element to the crime.
Aren't you asking us, though, to read that sentence, threatening words do not constitute harassment, if neither the person has neither the present or nor future ability to carry out?
I am not asking that, and I think there's some language in Boyle that actually is, I don't think it was intended to imply this, but it almost does imply an element, and that language is, it reads, the Boyle Court reads that sentence, and then it says, conversely, if it is apparent to the CJP that the speaker had either the present ability or the future ability to carry out the threat, the statement would constitute harassment. It makes that almost like there's a burden that we have to show one of those two things, and that's simply not true, because this has to do with not the nature of the threat or what the defendant says. This has to do with the reasonable fear of the criminal justice participant and their knowledge. They could know the defendant has the present and future ability to carry out the threat. They also may have no knowledge whatsoever about the present or the future ability to carry out the threat. That's still harassment. This
felony harassment.
What's that?
Felony harassment.
Yes. It doesn't add another burden to the state. It doesn't change the nature of the threat. It doesn't change the...
Well, isn't that, the problem is, it's, the problem is implying the converse. I mean, in other words, this is a sentence that we're dealing with. You can't start crossing out words and saying, so now we can infer that something is harassment if blah, blah, and blah. You just have to take it the way it is.
It is exactly right, and that's my point.
This is not meant to state an element of harassment.
Exactly. Here, I looked at it this way. This is the logical synergism or conclusion that the defense wants to bring. The interpretation of the wording of the statute, if the criminal justice participant knows the defendant has no ability to carry out the threat, is not harassment. And I'm not using present or past because the focus isn't on the present, or I said past, present or future harm. The focus is on, is there a requirement of knowledge? So the defense wants to say from that sentence, ergo, it follows that the criminal justice participant must have certain knowledge. And that's not, that doesn't follow, because we know that, in fact, the criminal justice participant could have no knowledge of the actual abilities, which isn't required under the statute anyway. The defendant in a harassment case doesn't have to intend to carry out the threat. We know that from, you know, JM and Kilburn and all the other Supreme Court cases on harassment. They don't have to have the intent. They don't have to have the ability. Now, the victim does have to be in reasonable fear. So if the victim, whether it is a JP or whether it is just an ordinary victim, if they know they have no ability to carry out the threat, well, how would they be in reasonable fear? So everything that they know about them, their ability or their lack of ability, simply goes into the reasonable fear element. There's no proof that we have to say, hey, you know, he or she has this particular knowledge. It just simply isn't in the wording of the statute. I should also point out that the threat itself doesn't have to have both a threat of immediate harm and a threat of future harm. So how does the defendant's interpretation of the statute play into that? The threat could be, I'm going to shoot you right now. Or the threat could be, tomorrow I'm coming to get you. It has one component but not the other. But the defense apparently would have to say under their argument, that cannot be prosecuted as felony harassment, because the victim has to believe they have the present ability and the future ability. The statute simply doesn't say that. It doesn't make sense. Unless there's any further questions, I simply ask the court to uphold this conviction. I would add the one caveat that in writing a decision, if it happens to be published, that you look at that language that I cited in Boyle and be careful that we don't imply that there has to be this future element, because quite frankly, I would be afraid at that point that the Whippet Committee would get a hold of that and suddenly we've got a new element that doesn't exist. Thank you.
This is a unique form of harassment we're talking about, a unique form of felony harassment. It only involves criminal justice participants. And so we have to keep that in mind in analyzing this entire problem, because the legislature made clear we want to set aside there's going to be a broader, a higher level of fear required, and the scope, which is suggested by threatening words do not constitute harassment, the language we're talking about today, that talks about scope. Now, if we accept the state's argument that, in fact, this is not a new element, that even if this language clears that in a case where you have, where it becomes apparent, the fact make it apparent that the person didn't fear they had the present and future ability to fear, then maybe that's when this comes into play. And that's exactly what you have in this case. You have CCO Johnson saying, if I knew he couldn't shoot me right there, I had all these big other CCOs with me and they escorted him out. My concern was in the future. And you also have the prosecution in closing argument conceding, no, he knew she couldn't shoot him. He wouldn't shoot her right there. It was in the future. So we have this scenario presented to the jury. It's apparent that she did not fear he had both the present and future ability to carry out the threat. So maybe this is one of those unique cases that gets resolved without a published decision on that very note. But I would suggest to you, if you look at, follow through what the legislature did in this case in enacting it and adding the Kagi Amendment, They're trying to set this apart from regular old felony harassment and regular old harassment. This is a special class of felony for all of us to be protected by. And in doing so, the legislature made clear we want higher level of fear and a broader scope of fear. For that reason, we would ask this court not follow Boyle and reverse Mr. Cicao's opinion, whether by disputing Boyle or simply showing that this, in this unique circumstance where we have this evidence of apparent lack of fear, of a present ability, that this comes into play and that they therefore did not convict him of felony harassment as a matter of law because the evidence was strictly insufficient. Unless the court has any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks once again.
That concludes our session.